let me pause right here. We've talked about a bunch of stuff this morning, and open it up for some questions and maybe some comments. Yeah.
There's been a lot in the news and on TV about the secret, sort of where you put in your mind what you want, you know, and then I haven't even seen the movie yet, but it seems so counter to this, and sort of like all you have to do is visualize what you want and then you'll get it, kind of thinking, which is so different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's something called secret out there.
Yeah,
that says if you just visualize what you want, you think about it enough, that you'll get it. We do that already. Yeah. Why are we so stupid that we're having somebody make $1 million teaching us to be self-centered and think about what we want? We're already doing it. Aren't we? All day and all night, we're already thinking about what we want and visualizing what we want. Yeah? And does it work?
No.
Does it work very well, does it? Yeah? And it's a total, you know, because what we want, okay, if what we wanted were something beneficial for everybody, that way of thinking could be very productive. Okay? If we put our mind on may all sentient beings have happiness in its causes, that would be a wonderful way. If that were our innermost aspiration or wish, and we thought about that all the time, thinking about that would change our behavior and would help us, you know, contribute towards that happening. But if we're thinking, may I become rich and famous? And we're already doing that. Does that bring that about? No, it brings about much more dissatisfaction when we can't become rich and famous. Okay? Because, there's a very big difference between focusing on a very selfish attachment versus focusing the mind on a noble aspiration. So don't confuse attachment with aspiration. Okay, because attachment is based on exaggeration. Yeah, positive aspirations aren't. Because wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody had happiness in the cosmos? Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody sat down and thought about what happiness was so that they would know how to create the cosmos for it? One of the reasons we don't have happiness is because we aren't very clear on what it is. And so we create the causes for suffering instead of the causes for happiness. But if we really think about that, you know, and then we create a positive aspiration for all living beings and focused on that, wow, wouldn't that be terrific?
I think that there are people out there that don't really know what they want, so they think they want it, and then when they get it, it isn't what they wanted, and then they want something else, and they certainly they're not happy.
Yeah, okay, very good point. We don't know what we want. We want something, and then we get it, and then we're not happy. So we want something else, and we get that, and we're still not happy. This is what you call advertising. True or not true? Isn't this what the media is teaching us? You need to have this. Go out and buy it. And our experience is it doesn't make us happy, so what do we have to do? We have to go out and buy something else. Yeah? And this is called being a good citizen. It's also called using more of the world's resources and exploiting the third world. It's also called being happy the American way. Are you confused or are we not? You have a question? Up there, a comment? Somebody?
No? I just had a different perception of what the secret was about, totally.
It's just the law of attraction exists. It's just pointing out how it exists and how to use it in a way that's more beneficial than negative in your life. That's my perspective.
Okay. Thank you.
When you create an illusion, you believe in that perspective.
Yeah.
And then you go off and you come to a realization that that was an illusion. How do you know when your processing is more pure? You know what I mean? You're creating a whole new illusion to have a different perspective. How do you know when you're more, because we're all flavored through our eyes. How do you know when it's more, when it's pure?
Okay. So the question is, we create an illusion. Yeah, we believe in it. After a while, we realize something's wrong with our illusion, and so we have another idea in our mind. But how do we know that one's not an illusion, too? Okay? This is, when you know it's not an illusion is when there's peace in your own heart and when you have the big picture. Let me use the example of divorce, because this is a really good example, of illusion and counter-illusion. Okay? So, when you met this person, they were like the best thing in the world, and they were going to be everything to you. And you totally believed it. And you were going to live happily ever after, because that's what all the movies tell you. At least part of the movie. Because the second part is, of course, about conflict, but we just censored that part, So here's this wonderful person we live happily ever after. Everything's going to be wonderful, okay? Then you live with them for a while, and you realize that they aren't as perfect as you thought they were, okay? And you become disgruntled, and there's this whole issue about the chunky peanut butter that keeps coming up, and you're getting really upset there, and you reach a certain point where you're totally fed up with this person, and they just are uncooperative, and they don't listen, and you're so mad at them that you just can't even talk to them or look at them, and you don't want to think about them, even though you're thinking about them all the time, because you're so mad. Okay, and then you think, oh, well, at least now I'm not attached to them. I've gotten over the illusion of being attached. Okay, but that's a good example of then we've gotten into the illusion of painting them totally bad. Because no longer are they totally good, now they're 100% bad. Because they do this and they do that and all these things, but I didn't notice all these years we were married. Okay. Is your heart at peace? No. Your heart is full of anger. So, when there's this raging anger, then you know that you're not seeing things correctly. When there's raging attachment, we know we're not seeing things correctly. Okay? So the alarm should go off at either of those two extremes. How do you know that you have a correct image of that person? Okay. If you look at that person, what are they? They're a living being. From a Buddhist perspective, they're a living being who is caught in cyclic existence, the cycle of birth and death, and birth and death. Even if you aren't a Buddhist, you can see that it's a person that experiences birth and who experiences death. So a person who wants to be happy but never is able to get everything that they want. So a person who has some really good intentions and some really excellent qualities and who has some bad intentions and some bad qualities. It's a person who has so much incredible potential but also somebody who sabotages themselves. Okay. When you can see the person in that way, and then you see, wow, here's somebody who wants to be happy, they don't want to suffer, They're confused about what happiness is and how to get it. They're confused about what suffering is and how to avoid it. So they're creating the causes for suffering and they're attempting to be happy. What is an appropriate reaction towards somebody like that? Compassion. Yeah. Yeah. Because here's somebody who has so much potential. Yeah. And who really has a good heart buried in there, but who gets totally overwhelmed by their own stuff. Isn't that a cause for compassion to arise in our own mind when we see them? So when you get to that point of being able to look at them in that way and see that actually they're just like everybody else, because everybody else has so many good qualities and also self-sabotages, and everybody else wants to be happy and creates the cause of suffering. Okay? So that really is, on a conventional level, a much more realistic view of that person and of everybody else in the whole universe. And when you have that kind of view of everybody in the universe, there's some open quality in your heart, isn't there? And that open quality of the compassion it activates the immune system, our psychological immune system, so that we don't catch attachment and anger. Because when we see a person in the bigger picture in this way, for what's really going on in their life, then we can't be attached to them because they're impermanent, and we can't hate them because they have these good qualities. Yeah? So they're exactly like everybody else. They're an object of compassion. Okay. So when you get yourself to that point, there's real peace in the mind. Yeah? Because there's not all this bias, and there's not all this prejudice, and there's not all this comparison and judgment going on. Okay? And the view that you've come to is actually something accurate, that will enable you to relate to that person in a productive, useful way, because you're not exaggerating the reality, the conventional reality of what they are. Hmm? Yeah.
What, in your opinion, or what do you say, through my training of Buddhist quantum meditation, and then writings kick on how living Buddha, living Christ, mm-hmm. and in the book he said, go back and learn true to what your ancestors taught you. Mm-hmm. Really understand that through his relationship with Thomas Merton. So, and go back with beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. So I took his advice and I went back and tried to understand really the teachings of Christ, which I truly love and embrace. But what I seem to find is such intolerance, and I suffered a lot, I still suffer from moments of this, is if you talk about Buddhism, be it the Christian, or if you talk to some other people about Christ, there's this, and for me it was ignorance. It was just, you talked about suffering, what God, which is ignorance. But what I found was the intent of both, which creates this love and peace. And by studying both, so much more content and so much peace. And so what do you say to people, say you're Buddhist and they attack that, or I'm a Christian who's trying to follow that teachings of Christ. I don't find any problems in theology and things, but I don't worry about that. I have convinced you. Mm-hmm. And so how do you deal with that?
Okay, so let me repeat what you asked. So you're saying that Thich Nhat Hanh, he's a really excellent Buddhist teacher, said that you should go back and look at your religion of origin and, look at it with a fresh mind and see the good things in it, see it in a fresh way instead of a reactive way. And so you did that, and you grew up Christian, and you saw that there were a lot of you know, really good teachings in Christianity, you know, about love and peace and forgiveness and so on, that you really appreciate. And, you know, you're not so concerned with the theology of it, but more concerned with the practical applications and the good human values that it teaches. And you find those also in Buddhism. And so the two religions in that way are quite compatible and have similar thoughts and aims in terms of promoting ethical conduct and forgiveness and kindness and compassion. And yet you meet sometimes people who may follow one religion or the other who are intolerant of the other religions. And so then you ask, how do I respond when people criticize Buddhism? Okay? How do I respond? Is there an opinion? You know, people are full of opinions. It doesn't mean that their opinions have any truth in it. And I don't need to defend my, you know, the faith that I follow. And there's no need in me to defend it and prove it to somebody else, especially somebody who is not going to listen when I prove it, try and prove it to them anyway. You know? I mean, it's this whole thing of, you know, what do you talk about your spiritual beliefs? Who do you talk about spiritual beliefs with? You know, I talk about them with people who genuinely want to have a discussion or are interested in them. The people who don't really want to learn about them, but who just want to, you know, go on and on about their beliefs, I don't even enter into a discussion with those people. I don't find it useful, you know. When they come to my door, I usually say, you know, I'm a Buddhist, and there's many good things about, you know, whatever faith you believe in, and if you practice that, you'll be a kinder person. Thank you very much. And close the door, and that's it. You know, I mean, I don't even enter into discussion because they don't want a discussion. Okay? And I don't need to defend Buddhism. You know, there are people in my family who don't agree with me being Buddhist, who think, you know, they say you're such an intelligent person, how can you believe in rebirth? You know? Well, that's their opinion, you know? Just leave it. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to react. Yeah? I remember very early on, you know, when my teacher told me yesterday, because he would teach that all of us in Nepal and then send us back to our Western countries for a year, you know? And he would say, if people criticize Buddhism and you get mad, then there's something going on in your mind. There's some attachment there. Something happening. So I really took that to heart, and I realized, you know, the Dharma is pure. This person's idea is incorrect. It's not going to damage the purity of the Dharma. You know, and if they're open, I'll tell them, you know, give them the correct information and point out, you know, how religions can coexist in harmony and be mutually beneficial. Then I just leave it at that, you know. Yeah.
Could you expand on ignorance?
Okay, so could I expand on ignorance as one of the things that causes suffering? Okay, there's many different kinds of ignorance. Okay, there's one kind of ignorance that we say is the root of cyclic existence. Okay, the kind of ignorance that keeps us. That is a basic misapprehension or misconception of how things exist. Okay? So that is a fundamental kind of ignorance, because whereas things exist dependently, this ignorance thinks things exist independently, with their own essence, with their own power to set themselves up. So that's a fundamental ignorance that lies behind our whole existence in a cyclic existence, okay? Then there's another kind of ignorance. Well, there's many kinds of ignorance, but the second prominent one is an ignorance that doesn't understand karma or action and the effects of our actions. Okay? So this is a kind of ignorance get things, for example, lying to cover up the negative thing I did is going to bring me happiness. Okay, that's the way that ignorance thinks. Or that ignorance thinks going out and getting drunk on Friday night is going to bring me happiness. Or cheating on my income taxes is going to, you know, is the just way to do my taxes. Or, you know, telling everybody about all the awful things so-and-so did to me is the correct response to that person's insulting me. Okay? So this is a kind of ignorance that doesn't understand that our actions create the results that we ourselves will experience. And instead, this ignorance just looks very short-term at what we think is going to be a short-term effect of the action. And it doesn't understand the whole idea of karma. You know, karma just means actions. But that the result of the action is not what happens, is not only what happens in the next 5 minutes. You know, that our actions leave imprints on our mind, these predispositions to experience certain things or act certain ways or find ourselves in different situations, that our actions leave these kind of imprints on our mind, and these imprints, when they ripen, determine what situation we're, you know, we experience. They influence who we're reborn as, where we're reborn, what kind of body we have, what kind of our, you know, our personality, mental habits that we have, you know, how we interrelate with people, whether, you know, people like us, you know, all these kinds of things. A lot of it is influenced by our previous actions. But when we're unaware of that, or even when we're intellectually aware of it, but at the time we're acting, we don't think about it, then we are just more concerned with the immediate effect of the action and thinking that doing this and that is going to get me immediate happiness, whereas in fact we're planting the seeds for long-term suffering. Okay? So this is the ignorance of karma and its effects. Okay? And if we look in our lives, you know, that ignorance has come up a lot in our lives. You know, I mean, lying. We've all lied, right? Anybody here has never lied? Okay. We're opening up to a lot of stuff this weekend, aren't we? You know, publicly. Yeah, we've all lied. And we've all lied to cover up things that we don't feel good about doing. And we don't want other people to know about because then they won't think very well of us. True or not true?
True.
True. Okay. We've all lied out of incredible attachment to reputation. That's what it is. Attachment to what other people think about us. Or maybe we're attached to them, you know, approving of us. Or we're attached to them saying nice, sweet words about us. And if they know that we did this and that, they're not going to say those nice, sweet words. They're not going to approve. They're going to think bad of us. We don't want that, so what do? We lie. Okay? And we think that that lying is going to bring us happiness. Okay? And so we lie. And we then, you know, after we lie, we think, phew, okay, I got out of that one. Yeah, we didn't find out about that. Okay? But what happens? We lie. Did we have a good motivation for lying? No, our motivation was 102% selfish. Okay, one, deliberately trying to deceive somebody. Okay, so our motivation was not some kind of magnanimous, you know, compassion. It was rotten. Let's face it. Okay. So, by the power of this rotten motivation, doing an action, you know, that is harmful, leaves, you know, this negative imprint on our own mind. Yeah? that this is, it may not ripen for 50 years, it may not ripen for 50 lifetimes, it may not ripen for 50 eons. But if we don't purify it, that imprint is there. And so further on down, maybe in, you know, 55 million years, we're born in a situation where nobody believes what we're saying. Have you ever had that happen to you, where you're telling the truth and still people don't believe you? You ever had that happen? Yeah? Or you're really saying something that's worthwhile with a good intention and people totally dismiss it? Why does that happen? It's a karmic result of having lied. Okay? When we experience that result, we go, why aren't people believing me and telling the truth? Why aren't they valuing my words? You know, I'm trying to say something truthful and beneficial. And we're not realizing that it's because of the unethical action we did with a rotten motivation 55 million years ago. You know? Okay? But that karma is definite, and it's going to bring a result if we don't care about it. So, you know, this ignorance that doesn't understand karma gets us into those kinds of situations.
And then somebody will say, well, I don't know why this happened to me. They don't realize some past thing that they did catching up to them.
Exactly. Sometimes people say, what's happening here? They don't realize it's the result of something that we did ourselves in the past. Okay. And then also involved in that lack of, in that act of lying, okay, we have the ignorance about karma and the long-term effects of our action. But we also have an ignorance thinking that the other person isn't going to find out. Okay? Now, all those times when we lied because we didn't want somebody to know about something horrible we did because we're afraid they won't love us anymore, how long were we able to keep it hidden from them? How often did they wind up finding out about it? One way or another. Somebody else told them about it. They realized that we were acting a little funny, probably because we realized that we had done something that had broken the trust with them, and then we started thinking, well, I wonder what's going on, and they did some investigation, and they found out, you know. How often have we actually succeeded in preventing somebody from knowing something? You know, not so often. And then what's the result of that line? It destroys the trust, doesn't it? Okay? So here's somebody that we care about, we lie to them. We're destroying the trust when what we really want is to build trust. Okay, so that ignorance counts in there too.
How do we cleanse
this imprint? How do we cleanse this imprint? You gotta come back at 1:30. I'll give you a hint. I'll outline it now, but we're really like at the end of our session. But this is an excellent question, you know, because if we can cleanse these imprints, then we're really doing something good for ourselves. Been very good for ourselves, okay? And we experience benefit right away because, you know, psychologically, spiritually, we're much lighter. Okay, it's called, this process called the four opponent powers. First one is having regret. Second one is repairing the relationship. Third one is the remedial action. And fourth one is the determination to avoid doing it again. So I will unpack those four at 1:30. Before we break, let's keep it quietly for a moment and do what I call a little digestive meditation. Okay? So let's just take a moment and think about what, you know, what you heard this morning. so that you can remember it and apply it to your life. Peace in their hearts.